I have these friends, Dan and Sheila. Actually, they're podcast hosts.
Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And today, oh boy, are we talking about two fun episodes. Because, hey, you know how you've been spending a season and a half wondering exactly what the Millennium Croup is? Well, now we know.
Yes.
They just put all in front of it, and it turns into, like, a Len Deaton novel for two episodes.
And it even has Nazis.
Yeah, so. Well, of course. Of course it has Nazis.
What
more,
else?
More relevant now than it was in the 90s.
Yeah, I know.
Gotta watch out for Nazis.
And we kept warning them. The warning signs were there. Yeah. This was coming.
Yeah, you always got to be on the lookout for Nazis. They're always coming back. They would love a chance to come back. And now with Trump, they came back. But anyway.
They came into the open.
Well, yes, they were always there. But, you know, now they came into the open. Now you got people just being openly, you know, Nazis. Which, yeah, that's terrifying, but here we are. We just have to fight them. That's what that's what you do with Nazis. You don't just knock them out. I'm looking at you, a certain video game franchise.
Well, they love to hate you.
Oh, do they ever? But that's a whole other conversation. Yes, so, Owls and Roosters. Let's do it. So, what an opening. Guys using ground-penetrating radar at a mosque. Right? Searching for something.
Yeah.
And drilling it up. And then guys come to assassinate the dudes who've just excavated this piece of wood from the ground.
Yeah.
And one of the excavators gets shot. And then they aim at the second guy, who happens to be holding the pieces of the piece of wood, and their gun won't work.
Yeah.
Leaving him free to execute the two of them. Their guns just stop firing the minute they're pointing at the guy with the piece of wood. And they get in the car, and the driver, because, you know, one of the three guys got shot. The driver's like, oh, my God. the guy number three, the guy who got shot, is like, oh, his blood got on the piece of wood. And then we find out, no, it did not. That blood has been there for 2,000 years because this is a piece of the actual cross that Jesus was crucified on.
Yeah, that's what we find out in the beginning.
Oh my God, what an opening. How do you get a stronger opening than this episode? Oh, wow.
We don't know what's going on.
Nope.
Because the guy who's leading the assassins,
yep,
right, says the magic words.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. This is who we are. He pretends to be a member of the Millennium Group. Or he might be a member of the Millennium Group. We don't know. And so, this, in fact, exactly. So they're immediately suspicious. And we see the guys trying to smuggle it out of the country while a white dude with a brush cut is watching him try to smuggle it out of the country. And the white dude with the brush cut sets off a bomb after destroying the security cameras so nobody sees him after, you know, people have been killed by the bomb, walk over, pick up the plank of wood, and walk away. It's quite a plan, and it works to perfection. Back in America, things are just all, like, happening all over the place because this episode, like, it's jumping all over the world.
Yeah, it's a pure 1.5 hours of Robert Ludlum.
Yeah, because we see Catherine, right, going in for a job interview. A company is having a bunch of workers move up from South America. And they want someone, as kind of a part-time counselor there, to, you know, chat with people. And just say if they have any stresses over this, if they have any issues getting used to life in, you know, going from beautiful Argentina to dour, rainy Seattle, like, these people are going to have new concerns And it would be great if we had a counselor on staff. And it's going to be much easier work than what you're doing working with victims of crime, you know? Yeah. And working with people who are interfacing with social services. And so she's thinking about it. But again, this sure is a hell of a lot of white people moving up from South America.
From Argentina, Peru.
Yep. People who've paid attention know what that means. Meanwhile, yeah. Laura has her computer hacked, and she can't get in touch with the Millennium Group, and the Millennium logo of the Ouroboros is replaced by the Millennium logo with an owl sitting in it.
Yeah.
Oh, so what the hell does that mean?
We don't know at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's a big mystery. And so we get a meeting of the actual Millennium Group. Peter Watts and all the other higher-ups are there. And they're essentially saying, they're accusing one group of the one faction of the Millennium Group attacking another faction of the Millennium Group. And this is where we start to find out about owls and roosters, right?
Yeah.
Owls know that the night is long and roosters crow to warn of the coming dawn.
Yes.
And
metaphorically,
yes. And Peter Watts and his faction are roosters.
Yes.
They believe that there is an apocalypse coming, and it is a religious apocalypse. Like, yeah. The world is going to end in 666 days. In fact, pointedly, when Laura Means opens up her thing and finds she's been locked out, it's 665 days, meaning the previous day when the cross was found was 666 days. Until the millennium. Just a little note. Oh my god. I just realized something. I forgot to talk about something last week on the Mikado, which I'm going to briefly just mention now. Sorry about this, everybody, to go off. So, when I've seen this episode of television maybe 100 times. I never noticed this.
Okay. So,
when Brian Rodecker is making the fake version, right, of the webpage that they're going to put out for everybody to see, he has to put a fake number of the hit at the bottom right. Now, you might think, shouldn't that first fake number, because he's creating the test image, by all logic, that number should be lower than the target number, right? Makes sense?
Yeah.
It isn't, because it's 502, it's 503581. Do you know what number he puts down?
What?
888-911. Now, for everybody who doesn't get this, and there's going to be plenty of you, in Christian numerology, 888 is the number of Jesus Christ.
Perfection.
Because 8 is perfection and the infinite. And so 888 is the number of Jesus Christ in Christian numerology. That's why they changed the number of the beast from 616 to 666, so it would better match the 888 of the number of Christ. So, essentially, they hid in this episode, I don't know exactly how it's meant, but it seems to say, they put in the message of saying, ask God to save you. Ask for Jesus to save you, because it's 888-911. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, gee.
Hey, I know, but it's right there in front of you. There's no reason for him to write a bigger number. That's a little message in there. Anyway, so just thought you'd enjoy that. All right,
I thoroughly enjoy that.
Okay, good.
For a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I thought you would. All right, so let's get into it, though. So we find out, and we might as well lay it out now, because, like, waiting until it happens organically in the episode would just be a whole mess. What the roosters believe, as I said, is the Christian apocalypse. You know, end of days, blood raining from the sky, seals opening, you know, just a Christian, exactly. Like, Book of Revelations happening.
Yeah.
Right. Book of Revelations happening right now, the year 2000. What the owls believe is in a secular apocalypse.
Yes.
They believe that 6 billion years ago, right when the Earth was forming,
mm-hmm.
6 billion light years away, two neutron stars collided. And the energy wave created by that, which is expanding outward at the speed of light, is created a new universe that is changing everything. And it is going to hit the Earth at some point in the next 60 years.
Yes.
And they don't know if humanity can be saved by that, from that. They don't know if there can be protection. They don't know what that change means. But they believe in a secular apocalypse that is 60 years away. And that is the difference between the owls and the roosters. That pretty much covers it?
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. That's exactly what's going to happen. And they are based on technology because they've always been involved with, for example, Copernicus and Galileo. Yeah. And they always had they've always had technological
advances above everybody else.
Before everybody else.
Because they are the storehouses of the world's secrets, they had technology far ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that has been hinted at in the show.
Yes.
On many occasions, you know, right from the first season where they're getting fingerprints off of, a bracelet that has been underwater for 6 hours.
Yeah.
You know? That kind of stuff. Like, they've hinted at this before, so this isn't coming out of nowhere. But what it comes down to is that all of them are working towards a common goal. They all need this secrecy. They all need this control, whichever of the two of them are right.
Yeah, so, and things have been happening, and so they're now starting to really fight with one another.
Mm-hmm. And the key is, why would the owls want the cross? Now, the cross is, we get the backstory of the cross, which is fantastic. Which is that Constantine's mother went looking for the cross. Which, you know, I mean, the whole thing of Constantine's mother happening, traveling to the Holy Land, that all did happen. Like, that is all an actual part of Roman history, to find relics of Christianity, because he was the one who brought, the Romans to Christianity, and his mother was supposedly an incredibly devout Christian.
Yes, she was before, just as St. Augustine's was.
Exactly. And so he got that. He came by his faith, honestly, is what some will say. Because, of how incredibly devout his mother was. Other people will tell you that it was just a political move for him to turn Christian. We can't possibly know what Constantine believed. But we can say what he did, which was, send his mother on a fact-finding mission to Jerusalem. And throughout Bethlehem, and just through all of the sites of the life of Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah, and that did actually happen. That part of the episode is factual.
Finding the cross of Jesus.
Yes, that is the little extra part.
So supposedly she finds part of the cross. Mm-hmm. She cuts it into three pieces, leaves one in Jerusalem, puts one in Constantinople.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the one they were digging up at the beginning.
Laying the foundation of, they found the one in Damascus, Syria. They kept one with them, and that's the one that got captured during the Crusades. And that's the one they find in Damascus, Syria. They don't know, because one was left in Jerusalem, which has been lost. One was brought to Constantinople, and part of why the city lasted so long was that piece of the cross was there, is the implication. They don't say that, but if you know about how long Constantinople lasted and how long the Eastern Church lasted, like you would say, it's kind of amazing how long it lasted and how many sieges it survived. But it did last quite a while, till what, like 1450 or something?
Well, when the Muslims finally took it over.
Exactly.
Now, mind you, the Fourth Crusade destroyed it.
Well, yes.
No, it actually lasted until the Turkish Empire, the Turkish Caliphate.
There you go. And that's why we have Istanbul now.
Yeah, and So, yeah.
But the point is, the third one was the one that they explain the story that it was captured by Saladin and during the Crusades, and he was willing to give it back, but Richard massacred all of his prisoners, and so Saladin hid it away. And then later they buried it under a mosque because, right? And that is the one they have found in Damascus, Syria.
That was the thumbing his nose at the Christian.
Exactly.
After Saladin won.
And they say, why is it so important? And what he says is, well, you know, it's no army that carries this can lose. And in fact, and he says that the armies of Saladin went undefeated until they buried this under the under the ground of the church. Sorry, the mosque. So there you go. There's why they need the cross. He's like, if a war is coming, whichever side has this piece of the cross on the, you know, possession of it is going to win that war. And so it's unbelievably important for them to get this piece of the cross back.
And this is when we get the discussion of even Hitler was looking for it.
Yep, exactly. And that is why we find out about Odessa.
Well, yeah, we find out about that a little bit
later. But it's like, that's where it's, because we already know we're dealing with Nazis, because the guy called, when he did the explosion and got the piece of cross, he phoned in to report, and he phoned in German to an old man.
Yes. Who's just in a chair that we don't see.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, yes. But when we get that phone call with the first one, like, we're talking about this as a whole.
Yeah. But we're jumping around.
Phone call. We have no idea. I mean, you can, if you understand the lore around all of this, if you've seen Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I know.
Right? You know the lore. Mm-hmm. You understand. Okay, so these are Germans who managed to escape Germany, but at this point you're not getting any real, because it could be that this is just you would think it was the owls, or it could be the roosters, but it is your first clue. Like, why would the owls want the cross? Why would the roosters?
And why is this guy speaking German?
Well, like, no, because they've got millennium people all over the world.
That's true.
Okay, so speaking German. No, but there's something wrong with all of this, because the guy has blown up, the guy who was carrying it.
Yeah. I mean, we know something very suspicious is going on.
Yes, very, very.
And also, I mean, we know it's Nazis on the phone line, because they cut from the guy on the phone to looking over a picture of the guy as a young man shaking hands with Hitler.
So, the old man,
shaking
hands with Hitler. You're watching that, and you're of course their secret phrase on the phone is all about Rome.
Yep.
So that's what's going on, sort of there. In the meantime, back in Seattle, Megan has talked about the job.
Mm-hmm.
Not Megan. Catherine has talked about
with
the job.
With Frank, and he encourages her to take it.
Sure, because it's only two nights a week. She went out with this girl. She had a wonderful evening, you know, talking with this girl and telling her all about things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Frank goes, because now we're not going to this was just jumping from place to place to place, and you just had to follow it. And but Frank decides to go and have coffee with Catherine initially and meet this woman or whatever. And he gets these horrible images.
Yeah. When he's talking to Catherine about it.
Yeah, Hitler, the camps,
marching armies,
and looking at, you know, and then eventually he goes into her office as he's waiting for Catherine.
No, that's later. She hasn't started the job.
That's later. She hasn't started the job, but he just gets this weird
feeling about it.
Not saying anything.
No, because he's trying to be supportive.
And, you know, because it does sound like it's only two nights a week.
Yeah, sounds like a perfectly good job opportunity.
And, you know, it'll add to her income. Plus, you know, it means that Jordan is going to spend Tuesday night and Thursday night at
with
Frank's
him. Home. Exactly. And he'll drive her to school in the morning the next day. It'll be fantastic. It's a step towards getting them back together.
Yes.
Meanwhile, a high up in the Owls goes to see Laura to try and recruit her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, and this is the thing.
We've missed Laura's. We've missed. No. Let's, before we get to that.
Okay.
We have the picture. We have Laura.
Yeah.
Sort of in her home. Mm-hmm. And she sort of has this horrible feeling. You can see it. And she starts crying and she looks and she sees this huge angel.
Yeah.
So she has she knows that whoever these people were that were assassinated in Damascus are dead.
Yeah.
And she's crying and crying and crying. And it's after that that the owls try to recruit her and explain to her their understanding of when the apocalypse is going to occur.
Yeah. And they have and that's the thing, is what you will say about the owls is they have a much easier to sell story.
Yes.
They have a much easier to sell story, right? He's like, in exactly the same way that Einstein proved that black holes existed before we had the ability to observe them, we can tell that this thing is coming for us. Like, they have the numbers to prove what they're saying in a way that the roosters profoundly do not.
No.
Like, the roosters can't prove anything they're saying. Okay, yeah, the magic plank from the with the blood of Christ on it is pretty good.
Well, it stopped bullets.
It stopped bullets, but of course nobody knows that happened. Because everybody who was there is dead. Yeah.
It didn't stop the guy. Now, but that was the point. The guy didn't have it on his body or in his hand.
He wasn't holding it.
No.
Yeah. And that's, in fact, the strength of the wood is going to come up later. Right? But we then see Peter Watts. We see somebody in Frank's house. Like, doing a bug sweep of Frank's house and searching his computer for listening devices and all of that. And Frank comes home with Jordan, because Catherine's at the new job, and is really unhappy to find Peter Watts in his house.
Yeah.
Like, because let's face it, that's a scary thing to have happen, just having Peter Watts turn up.
Well, and it's not the first time he's done this stupid thing.
Yeah, pulled this kind of stunt. And so Peter Watts is is incredibly tense, and he needs to know whose side Frank's on. And Frank is like, no, I have been nothing but manipulated and lied to by the Millennium Group. I am not on a side here. I'm out.
Yeah.
So yeah. So Laura is still in. Although not for long, spoiler alert about the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Because Peter Watts is going to reject her for membership because she's been approached by the owls. Like, they are being torn apart by this, is the key part that we have to keep track of.
What's happening. There is nothing that can get them back together again.
Mm-hmm.
Except
one person. Who, of course, one person, and he doesn't show up yet because first we've got to get the head of the owls. Who tried to recruit Laura, you know, tries to talk sense into everybody. And he's like, we're going to go to a meeting and I'm going to talk sense into everyone. And what should happen, but the same assassin shows up and murders him. And throws a plank of wood in the trunk of his car and sets it on fire. And so now it looks as if the owls were behind stealing it. And the head of, essentially the de facto head of the owls has been murdered. And this is enough to shatter the Millennium Group to its core.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, and as the head of the rooster says, there's only one man that can possibly bring us back together again. Because they say this has happened before.
Yep.
This is not the first time the Millennium Group has had cracks, but they've always managed to.
They've always managed to put it together. Yeah. But we also see that Frank, and this is where Frank first comes in contact with the company. And because Catherine's car has died.
Well, wait a sec. No.
Yeah, Catherine's car has died, and she has to call Frank to come and give her pick her up.
Doesn't he go in to meet her for coffee first?
No, that happens the next day when he comes to pick up the car.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And so this is where Catherine's the big scene happens. Catherine's car. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just, right before the assassination.
Just like the...
just like the security cameras were destroyed. And then the owl guy's car is fried exactly the same way in the next scene to be assassinated. Because it's the same man doing all of it.
Yeah. And we've already seen him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. We know exactly who this guy is. And we know he works for the aerospace company.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a confrontation about the autopsy between the two halves of the group, and the owls have to, you know, push in and demand because they're all scientists. The law enforcement people and the roosters don't take them seriously. So they demand to be let in because it was their member who got murdered, and they find out he was shot. So, you know, it's a pretty, pretty good sign that this wasn't an accident of some kind. And more importantly, there was a, in the struggle, he ended up with something that looks like it was branded into his neck. Which Peter, you know, sketches out. And we realize it's most of a Nazi lightning bolt.
Well, here, yeah, this is the thing, right? Yes. And then the neck, and so Peter sees that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then he sends off a...
a fax.
Off a fax, and we see the old man from the dog episode.
Yep.
Looking at the facts and sending back, not yet. Because Peter wants to know whether or not they can do anything. He's already been talking to the head of the roosters.
Yep.
And the head of the roosters says, well, I don't know. It's up to this guy to decide. The guy, so he sends off these two marks and the guy just says, not yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, this is all happening day one, the next day. Yeah, Frank wants to go because he's been looking up the Aerotech Society. There's nothing about Aerotech. They don't have a company. They don't exist, period.
Yeah, and so we have this great scene where he's going through, right? He's going through all of these pictures of Hitler and the Third Reich, and he finds a bunch of things of Hitler's watercolors, and one of them is the painting that was on the wall in the office of the head of Aerotech.
Yes, and she's, and as he said, and as he explains to Catherine later on, that these paintings of Hitler's, the watercolors, are only given to head members. At the absolute top echelon of Odessa.
Mm-hmm. Which is the organization of Nazis who fled to keep a... to essentially try and build a Fourth Reich.
Yes, and they had already been putting out all sorts of, in the South, basically in South America, putting money away even before the war started. They had started...
They had to have an escape route if it all went wrong.
Yeah, if it all went wrong. So, yeah.
They wanted to keep the movement alive. Yeah. Meanwhile, two guys have shown up outside of Frank's house. And Frank isn't taking any chances. He pulls his gun on the guy, and he can't. And the guy claims that he's from the Millennium Group. Obviously, Frank pulls a gun on him.
Frank doesn't care because I'm out of the Millennium Group.
Yeah. And in the thing that I like the most, Frank, of course, is suspicious because if these guys are just Millennium Group guys looking to, you know, keep an eye on us for Peter Watts, why are they both wearing gloves?
Yeah. And this isn't the first time you saw them. The first time you saw them, they sped away.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the same car, same license number, it's the same cars.
So Frank has a shootout with two Nazis and kills one of them. And I would like to point out that we are now, this is the second season. First season had 22 episodes. So we are now 38 episodes into a show about catching serial killers. And this is their second shootout in 38 episodes.
Yeah.
Nobody ever has a gun in this show. Nobody ever shoots anybody. It's so unusual for a cop show.
Yes.
You know, nobody's getting shot on Millennium. It just doesn't happen. Nobody pulls a gun on anybody on Millennium almost ever. It's very weird. But it's like there was the Thin White Line where the guy, you know, went to war with the cops. Right. Yeah. And then gets executed by Bob. Not even really a shootout that takes him down. Frank tries to talk him down and then Bob just kills him. And then you have this episode where Frank has a shootout with some Nazis. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. So, yes. Yeah, so we've, and then finally the Millennium Group sits down and says, he decides that, well, Frank goes into the office and actually he sees the cufflinks this woman is wearing.
Yeah.
And they also have these two slashes.
Yeah. It's the lightning bolt that's half of the SS logo.
Well, it's just, but it's not even the lightning bolt yet.
No.
Not on the cufflinks.
No, because yeah, you have to join them with the line to turn it into the SS logo.
Right? And then what happens, of course, is that they finally decide, okay, they send some more stuff to the man in the woods.
Yep.
And he says, oh, now is the time. And he makes the join.
Yep.
And that's when you know, you see the lightning bolt, you know, this is part of the SS and the Nazi symbol, right? Mm-hmm. These are the symbols. So that's it. And he's going to have to. And then we go back to, I don't know, Uruguay, Paraguay, wherever it is. Yeah.
Where we finally get to see the head of Odessa.
We see the head of Odessa and we see his hitman.
Mm-hmm.
Or his, you know, fixer.
Yeah, whatever you want to call the guy.
Whatever you want to call him. And the head of Odessa said, and we see this big flag.
Yep. Blood-soaked flag.
Yeah, on one corner. And you see the cross.
Yeah, the piece of the cross.
So we already know. They've sent the cross that was in the trunk off for carbon dating.
Yeah.
But we now know that that was a fake. Yeah. This is no cross,
About the carbon dating is this is terrifying to Peter Watts because it's just a piece of charcoal now. It was in the trunk of a car that burned, and it's a piece of charcoal. And if this is an actual piece of Jesus's cross, his faith, you know, demands that it could not burn in a fire. And yeah,
tells you it can't be real. Yeah,
well, no, but he's afraid. He has, and that's why he keeps the, you know, the radio dating information secret from everybody, because if it turns out this is 2,000 years old and it burned, then maybe nothing they believe is true. And he's terrified of that.
Yeah. Okay. Peter is not the one that holds on to the data.
Oh, no, that's true. Yes.
Data. It is the head.
It's Philip Baker Hall playing the head of the Millennium Group. Yeah.
The head of the Millennium Group. He doesn't tell anybody because it's not going to bring everybody back together again.
Yeah.
So he holds on to it. Peter doesn't find out what it
until
says
later. Yes.
Until the very end of the two episodes, right?
Exactly. Philip Baker Hall, who shows up, you know, as again the head who's supposed to fix this problem.
Yeah. So anyway, what then happens is that let's get back to the man, the head
of course.
And the head of Odessa says, but there's just one more person I have to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move back to Frank's house and we have the old man from the woods.
Yep.
And he's in the house. And
he shows up.
And he's the one that explains it all.
Yes.
He tells us the entire story that we have been telling you out of sync.
Yes.
You have to wait to halfway through the second episode to
get before he lays it all out.
Oh, yes. And then he goes to sleep, Laura. Frank goes to sleep. And we see outside is evil guy.
Mm-hmm.
Evil guy. And he comes down in the morning. He kills the old man.
Yeah.
And that then sets everything in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And the head of the Millennium Group just says, okay, that's it. We have to destroy them now because they have been aware that
they have known about Odessa this whole time.
Odessa, but they never thought that it would.
The one thing you're forgetting, is, okay. And this is, you skipped ahead, is that the reason Frank isn't there when the guy comes to kill the old man is that Frank has tried to figure out if the aerospace company is Odessa. So he goes in while, you know, goes in for coffee with Catherine and is just like, starts talking, you know, generic racist trash with the woman who's in charge of the company. About how he doesn't recognize America anymore with all these immigrants coming in. Doesn't it feel like, you know, everything's falling apart? And just, he wants to make it known that he's available for recruitment by Nazis if this happened to be a company of Nazis. And she, of course, naturally starts trying to feel him out about a job. And that night when Catherine leaves work, Catherine goes to leave work while Frank's talking. And she's going to wait outside in the car. A guy rushes up to her and says that this is Odessa. It's not really a aerospace company. This is Odessa. And the joke is, early in the episode, this is the guy that that she had been counseling.
Yeah.
Who is like, talks about how his boss is a real Nazi.
Yeah. And then, and she doesn't. Yeah. Because when he's talking about it in this counseling session, he doesn't. She doesn't, she thinks he's just it's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor.
And then he gets in the car, talks about Odessa, and then Frank gets him out of the car. Frank gets in the car.
Catherine, and he won't explain to her what's going on, and she drives off pissed. And so the reason Frank's not there is he goes and he rescues her from the company the next night. He goes to grab her and he goes to explain to her what Odessa is and the fact that she was only hired so they could approach him, right? And how this is all, you know, part of a Nazi plan. And that's what he's doing when the old man gets murdered in his house.
Yes. And she goes back to work the next morning and the guy she'd been counseling
has died. Like, she phones the house and has been murdered. Well, an accident happened, wink, you know? Yeah. But and we all know what actually happened.
She leaves and she tries to leave.
Yeah.
And they're chasing her. They're walking quickly to try.
Yeah. And this, sorry, this is the scene. This is the scene where he rescues her.
Yes. And then she gets outside. They're coming after her and he drives up and says, get in.
Yeah. And then that's where he is.
Explains everything to her.
Yeah, and so it's this fantastic scene, and then everything after the man gets killed, right? Because, and it's notable that the old man from the woods sees Laura's angel right before he dies.
Yeah,
right. He knows that the end is coming, and he fights for his life. And he tries to fight back. He does everything right.
Yeah,
but like he knows the end is coming because he sees the angel too. And so that's why we know that, I mean, the implication here is that Laura is fated to one day end up in that shack in the woods.
But not quite yet.
Not yet. But it's like, that is what that scene is telling us. That like Laura's role is that someday she's going to have his job for the Millennium Group. But yeah, after they say it's time, we do this great scene where... Yeah. Not only the kill, it's all intercut with the funeral of the old man.
Yes.
Where they kill the guy down in South America. Peter Watts goes to South America to assassinate the old man. They blow up the hitman in his car. They bring the FBI in to arrest everybody at the corporation.
Yeah.
And then we get the most frigging, Peter gets his confirmation that the piece of wood that burned was only from the 14th century.
Yeah.
Like that it was a fake. And then we get the wonderful moment at the end of the episode. Philip Baker Hall has become the new old man.
Yeah.
And Peter sends him the cross. And we know that this is the true cross because we saw the cross burning in the old man, in the Nazi, the head of Odessa's house when Peter set it on fire. But now we see it again and it's fine.
Yeah.
So it will not burn. Like, his faith has been rewarded, will not burn. And we get Peter Watts's message that he sent to Peter, Baker Hall, Philip Baker Hall. And the note is so strange.
Yes.
As planned, the dust has settled and the real cross now belongs to Millennium. Are we just the Romans that cast lots for the robe of Christ? So all of this has shaken Peter Watts's faith. It really has. Because he doesn't know if they're on the right side of this anymore.
Well, with all, yes.
Like, it is... I don't remember what it was like having to wait a week to watch the next episode.
Yeah.
This works so well, just watched all the scenes in a row.
Yeah.
Like, watching it as a two-hour event, it works perfectly as, well, as you say, as, just like the Ifkris file, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, any of those. It's just, it's such a wonderful... You know, the Nazis are still out there, spy thriller. It plays perfectly.
Yep.
It's such a good episode of television.
Yes.
Well, two episodes.
Yes, and the bad guys all get it in the end.
Of course. It's very satisfying.
However.
Yeah.
Nah, it's satisfying to a point until we get to the end.
Well, yeah, that's my thing. It's like, what a weird note to leave us on.
Yeah. I thought so, too. I'm just...
After all of that, after all of it saying that they're finally back together, Philip Baker Hall's the new old man, all that, and the note they leave us on is, are we just trying to steal his power? You know? Like, are we entitled to this power? Are we not just people? Like, have we become, you know, these Philistines who don't believe and just want to steal his power for themselves? It's an interesting idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's pure Millennium.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid we should have
it. Be satisfied. Yeah, no, you're right. Because other than what Peter writes on the note, literally other than that, everything about the end of this episode should be triumphant.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're like, no, we can't let the ending of this episode be triumphant.
Well, no, because ultimately it has to be faith in the face of doubt.
Yep. You can't ever be sure you're on the right side. It's such a strange way to make us feel.
Here's the weird thing.
Please.
You can know what is the wrong side.
Yeah.
Sometimes, right? Most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
But in terms of the ambiguity, the grayness of the right side, that's the one that is.
Yeah, like we know Nazis are bad. Don't get, like, the Nazis. Well, actually, that's a really good point you make, because you can look at the Nazis and say they are obviously evil, because they are. You know, Nazis, MAGA, all of these people, they're obviously evil. But what's the right thing to do?
Yeah.
That's, you know, much harder to figure out.
Yes, and because it is always the point. It's the point you and I go through and all sorts of other people, you know? That, okay, yeah, but everything one does has consequences, and you cannot always foresee consequences, and you cannot always, you know, I do not believe that the end justifies the means, hence... Yep. A lot of my problems. Right? The end doesn't justify the means, but, you know, okay, I will never, because for whatever reason, I'm never going to be put in that extreme position of having to decide whether or not to kill someone.
Yep.
This is never going to be a decision that I am going to have to make in the middle of a war.
That's not your life path.
No, and when the war comes, which I'm beginning to think it's going to be pretty soon.
Yeah, it's looking that way.
I'm not talking about Armageddon, guys. Don't worry.
No, we're just talking about America.
It's not going to be me who's going to be on the front lines fighting.
No.
Right? So I don't have those moral questions to ask.
Yeah.
And that's, you know... And they are moral questions.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go? How much secrecy do you keep?
Yeah.
You know, Frank is right. Frank has problems, too, with some of these issues that he has a he has a much more rigid system, but it is not based on faith in something supernatural.
No.
He's beginning to understand that all of those things may exist, but he doesn't, it's not, he can see what's wrong.
Yeah.
That's because he sees it. He's one of these few people who can see pure evil. And okay, so, but for the rest of us mere mortals.
Yeah. We have to figure it out, and we have to negotiate it, and we have to run through motivations and backstories and history and why did this person do that?
Yeah.
We don't get to look at someone and see the demon that is controlling them.
Yeah. And it might not even be the demon. It's just, okay, this is, you watch people with these belief systems. I mean, I sometimes have to question when I do some pretty, I have, please. There are some things that I just won't tolerate, right?
Yeah, of course.
And of course, that's the lot, you know. And then I go, Lyle love it. Okay, he's got a song. Some things my baby don't tolerate, right? Yeah, some things that you just, I draw a line at, and this line, and I can understand those ones, right? But I do understand that it's all so gray. And I understand people wanting certainty, but guess what, guys?
We don't get that.
There's no certainty. There never will be.
Yeah.
Probably we won't figure it out after we die. I had the funniest conversation. We will end with this.
Please.
Because then we will move, because we're going to do Satan Got Behind Me.
Well, that's not next week, but that is soon.
Yeah, soon. But anyway, because I watched it again after.
Isn't it perfect?
It's so wonderful.
It's perfect.
So I had this conversation with one of my students, and because I had picked up, there was a book in the library. We were going through some library books, and I picked up this book, and I said, yeah. And I said, in my next life, I'll become a scholar. I said, and then I'll be able to finish the work that I can't finish here, which is taking down John J.J. Collins. But anyway, we were laughing. She says, well, yeah, she says, and you're going to be reborn, and you're going to go looking through this and go, oh, look at this. I just found this researcher, Sheila Redman.
Who covered all of this stuff.
Who covered this stuff. Where can I go from this? I got to research and expand on this. Yeah. And I'm cracking up, right? We're in the middle of the library. Cracking up. But no, we will not. No. And that is all there is to it. And life is, you do have to make decisions, but there's, and you make choices.
And it is difficult to know. And it is difficult to know what the right side of things is. Right.
Well, you know, and we're.
But the weird part is, and what I was just going to say was, sometimes it's not hard to know.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and it's like I was talking to someone. I'm not going to say who. Right. I'm not going to say who. You know who. I'm not going to say who. But let's just say this person probably voted for Donald Trump. I'd never ask, but definitely voted for Donald Trump twice. And you know, is caught in this ecosystem where they have to live in a fantasy world, right?
Yeah.
To believe that they're not the bad guys. And what I said to them was, like, how do you understand? Because, of course, you know, when you're living in a fantasy world, you have to imagine that everyone else is living in a fantasy world. That's what being schizophrenic is. But what I said to them was, it's like, how do these people, meaning him, how do these people... like, look at a political party where literally their only platform, right? Their only priority is getting revenge against their enemies. Like, how do you look at that and still think you're the good guy?
Was there any response?
No. How can you possibly respond to that? Because again, these people have no political project. They just have revenge and grievance.
Yeah, revenge and grievance. And the world is more than revenge and grievance. And all
the world is infinitely more complex than revenge and grievance.
Yes, but all you have to do is look at the Middle East.
Yeah. And how is a cycle of violence that refuses to end. You have 70 years of the Jews taking out the Israelis, right? Taking out their quite understandable rage for the last 2,000 years. And what is the result of that?
This
is the result of that, you know? It's upsetting, but it's like, you have to work together or we're never going to get a better future for anyone. And it's not any more complicated than that.
Yeah.
If we can't work together, we're never going to have a better future.
Well, and to bring up Babylon 5 one more time,
please.
As you remember the Civil War in, this is what Straczynski was talking about.
Yeah.
Is what's going on now is that as when you have the Civil War that happens on Mimbari, which has been the most peaceful
society for 1,000 years.
Yes. Since Valen.
Since the time of Valen.
And now it's fallen apart and the war has started. And as the point is, as Dylan says, the head of the religious group, who had been the head of the group that ran the entire system, and she walked out and basically broke it all apart.
Yep.
Then the Civil War started.
Well, the idea was that she said that this, you know, fighting the shadows is too important. We can't sit here deadlocked over this system. But her breaking the system, you know, breaking the system to do that allowed the military to take over.
Yes. And so, but what happens, you have this massive civil war. And what she says is it just, once it has started and the rage, it has to play itself out.
Yeah.
Then in the end, somebody has to stop and give in.
Yeah.
And then who is that going to be, right? And of course, it is her.
Well, naturally.
And she finds a way around it.
Because it's a beautifully written hour of television.
Yes. And then what happens, you end up with an entirely new system.
Yeah.
That is based predominantly instead of has five workers.
Because it used to be the workers and the religious and the military were all equally three. And the Finnish version is five workers, two religious, two military. Yes. Because the workers are the people who, at the end of the day, they're the ones who make everything happen.
Yes, and they are the ones that pay the biggest price in war.
They're the ones who have to do the fighting. They're the ones who actually have to do the praying. And yet, they're the ones who just end up following everybody's orders. Well, no, they should be in charge. They're the workers. And are you saying, wait a minute, at the end of season 4 of Babylon 5, does Mimbar go communist? Yes, that is what happens at the end of season 4 of Babylon 5.
Anyway.
It's a very good TV show.
Yes. I keep telling people somebody is going to go and buy the whole Blu-ray set because they were one of the secondhand stores and saw it, didn't buy it at that point, told me about it and then said, well, you know, I'll probably end up. I said, well, you know, you can stream it with a VPN on Hulu. And I go, and he says, nah, he said, I like to have a copy.
I'm right there with him. That's just smarter.
I've got two.
All right. So, yeah, it's an expertly crafted spy thriller, this 2 hours of Millennium. Like, it truly is. It is a brilliantly constructed spy thriller. I love it to death. And it manages to be an episode of television about, you know, our heroes actually fighting and defeating the Fourth Reich that still managed to leave you unsettled at the end.
Yes. Because just because you've beaten the Third Reich, the Fourth Reich doesn't mean it's all over.
No. This stuff always cycles.
Yep.
All right. So we're going to call it there. Thank you so much for listening. What is next week?
Oh, well, I didn't put up IMDb because I had a whole bunch of other things going on. And I'll let you know. I mean, this just, look, I've had there is a nightmare at the university, as usual.
I do. Yes, I do know. I will look it up for you. Don't
worry. No, I'm doing it.
You're doing it now. Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, it doesn't matter. It's already...
Oh, my God. But yes, we are still two episodes. We still have two more episodes between us and getting to talk about Somehow Satan Got Behind Me.
Yeah, I know. And it's just...
It's perfect, isn't it?
Yep. It's just such a beautifully horrible episode of television.
It is so delightful. Oh, it really is. Oh, my God. All right.
Oh, never mind. I tell you, this thing.
Yeah?
Donna, what is going on? My computer is going crazy. We have to talk about it on the weekend.
All right. We will talk about your computer on the weekend. I'll load up Millennium on the IMDb.
Yeah, you see if you can get, you can.
Oh, I can. Don't worry. That's not an issue. I was just being nice. My computer works fine. I'm not going to be a jerk about it, but it's true. So, yes. Somehow Satan Got Behind Me. Again, on IMDb, apparently the best episode of Millennium.
Yeah.
Lamentation's amazing, but, you know, second? Come on. The Mikado exists. Next up is Siren. Episode 17. A mysterious Asian woman is linked to several strange deaths aboard a denuded Chinese ship, and she brings a message to Frank from hell. And then, in Arcadia Ego, the escaped female convicts, one of whom may be pregnant with the with the second coming of Christ. Yep.
We're going all in for this.
Oh, are we ever? This is going to be some exciting episodes next week. For now, though, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if there's any profiling-related fiction you'd like us to check out, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're listening on an app or podcatcher, please be sure to rate and review. That's how people find the show. We're going to be back here next week for more Millennium. And we're taking suggestions for what... Lance Henriksen, we're going to watch between seasons. My suggestion is going to be we watch my beloved, like two of my favorite Lance Henriksen villain performances of all time, which are Hard Target and Stone Cold. But yeah. if you have a movie that's, you know, more sympathetic to him, like Pumpkinhead, that you come up with, let us know. Maybe we're willing to take a shot. All right, so we'll see you back here for that, but until then, I'll say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good week.